Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Built Like This podcast. I'm your host Maxine on episode 298. Hi, hello, I hope you are doing well. Thank you for tuning in. I'm glad to be with you all. I want to just shout out everyone who has been supporting me lately and from the beginning of this podcast. It's been amazing to see the growth and the commitment and loyalty from you listeners. So thank you so much. And remember, if you would like to chime in on any of the topics that I've covered, or you want to introduce a new topic and just give your opinion on it, click the link in the description box. You can leave a voice note and I will share that in a future episode and comment. And it's like we're talking to each other. So this is welcome to anybody who's been listening, whether it's via YouTube or Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You are welcome to chime in and share your thoughts and opinions on any of the topics that we've discussed, or any new topic you want to share. So shout out to my sexy voice right now. I feel like this is Smooth Talk 101 with your host, you know? So if you want me to play a special slow jam for that loved one of yours, you know, if you want to get your girl back, if you want to get that man to hear you out, let me know what song you want me to play. Okay, let's get into these topics. So, Risa Tisa again. My God, I know you're tired of this, but I'm not. I think it's pretty interesting, this whole discussion here. And not to toot my own horn, but beep, beep, I was right. Apparently, according to what she has said in this latest video, Legion, who is the ex-husband of hers, that's the pseudonym that she gave him, he has a mental illness. He is actually bipolar and schizophrenia specifically. I want to go ahead and play this clip that I came across through my thorough research. And we'll talk about what she says here.
Chris wanted me to also let you all know the parents did everything they could to get Legion psychiatric help. At one point, they were taking him to different therapists and psychologists. He's been diagnosed as a kid with both bipolar and schizophrenia. I did not know this. Chris informed me today, Monday, February 26, during that phone call, that their father came out of retirement to help pay for the medications. And as Legion got older, he refused to take them. Did not.
So, you know, again, back to what we've been saying, I feel like oftentimes we don't credit enough of people's behavior to mental illness. Mental illness is more prevalent than we realize. And so I think it's very important for us to have these conversations and be honest and not take things as personal as we do. Risa Tisa actually shared that her ex-husband's father ran out of his retirement money to support his son with his medical expenses and all the treatment necessary to provide him with the proper care for his mental illness. So according to that, you see here some type of context and understanding for his behavior. I think with behaviors like this, we get so caught up in, of course, what is what we think is okay or what we think is not, what we think is acceptable from other people and what we think is not. I have no idea why the audio is not working. Oh, that's bothering me. Maybe I'll insert it post. So if you hear it after this talk, that's because I inserted it post. Anyway, but she talks about that. And so him having a mental condition is obviously the biggest factor here. And I think for so long, we've been conditioned to take things so personally, to say, you know, this person didn't make time for me. That's because he doesn't really like me. That's because he doesn't care about me, or he doesn't want to, or he's lying to me because he hates me, or he wants, you know, it's my fault. You know, like we find reasons to take things so personal when really everyone is living in their own reality. There is no, like, there's no other way to describe it. We're all living in our own lives, and we're doing our best to meet each other in this physical realm at the same time. But even in this physical realm, we're all living our specific realities. We all create scenarios in our mind and these battlegrounds. We're in these battlegrounds thinking that so-and-so is talking about me, so-and-so is out to get me. Like, we victimize ourselves or we make ourselves a villain. Either way, we create a character for us to fulfill in this reality, yet someone's experience of you is totally different from how you think you're coming across. All in all, I say this to say everyone has a mental illness. That's the end of the story here. Everyone has something going on, and I think it's very important for us to just give people grace. Now, yes, it's hurtful for Risa Tisa to have been with a man who lied to her day in, day out, who gave her white lies, black lies, like just lie after lie after lie. I get it. But if we change our mindset about that and stop taking it as a slight to ourselves, then we could finally realize, oh, this has nothing to do with me. This has nothing to do with me. I remember I was dating this guy who I felt really, really didn't care about me. And he manifested that in so many different ways, right? He would not call me days on end or text me days on end. He would not make time to see me. He would kind of go on his own watch or no watch at all. Like, it was very sporadic and like this adventure. And I remember I would ask him, I'm like, you know, why don't we like hang out more consistently? Why don't we hang out regularly? Like, why is it that every time I want to see you, you're never available on my watch, or you are, but it's like out of luck you so happen to be? And I remember he said to me, he likes to be spontaneous. Literally, that is what he said verbatim. He likes to be spontaneous. He likes to be able to, you know, oh, it's Friday, I'm feeling spontaneous, let me hit up Maxine and we'll hang out. And I took that so personally. I took that so personally. I took that as a way for me to feel bad about myself. Oh, something about me is why he's choosing to treat me like this. He's so disrespectful, yada, yada, yada. And granted, there were definitely moments in our relationship, whatever the fuck it was, honestly, but there were definitely moments in which he was disrespectful. But I'm not talking about that right now. I'm talking about the different behavioral patterns that I was seeing him. His sporadic nature was just a part of who he is. Now, I could be completely wrong, right? He could be totally good to a new girl right now. He could be like the, I know. But the point is, I took this seriously. I took this so personally. I took this as a shot to my self-worth. And now that I'm aware of how mental health manifests itself in different people, and granted, yes, not everyone has a mental illness, but I do believe a lot more of us do than we either realize or than we are forthcoming about. I remember with that guy, he will always talk to me about the traumas of his childhood, the traumas from his father, and how he was abusive to his mom, and how he saw his father, sees his father still battle with drug addiction. Like, he went through a lot in his childhood, and I think that is typically the main factor for someone to develop a poor mental health. You know, I think it's both of nature and nurture. I think like something chemically inside of him is imbalanced, and the nurturing of his environment or lack thereof definitely impacted his mental health. So I say all this to say, it's not me, it's him. You know, it wasn't me, it's him. You know, it was him. It was him. His behavior is not indicative of who I am as a person or my self-worth. His behavior was not indicative of how he feels about it, because he could have very well, and I, you know, now that I'm in this, like, detaching myself from your behavior means my self-worth is this, now I'm detaching myself from that, I do genuinely believe he liked me and he did love me or loves me still. I think those things could still be true. I think it could still be true that you like or love someone and they're probably not as attentive as you would like, or they probably don't consider the way you speak love and show love the way you would like. It's not coming from a bad place. You know what I mean? Like, it's not coming from a bad place. Instead, it's coming from a place of, this is just how someone operates. It just is what it is. Like, that's literally it. So, Risa Tisa girl, I hope that she can adopt that mindset as well. And I hope that she cannot let this make her feel inadequate. This brings me to the next topic here. So Charlamagne the God gave his two cents about this topic, and he said this is big back behavior, BBBs, right? And he was obviously being facetious. He was being funny. He was being the shock jock that he once was. And what I found interesting about this was he has now, I think, as of late, he is now becoming more of who he was in the beginning of his career at the Breakfast Club. You know, this very controversial take, kind of disrespectful, hot take, perspective. So now he's getting back to that. Now he is not being politically correct. Now he's not being as much of a, like, big brother image that he's presenting himself as. That's what I've been noticing. And shout out to Jess Hilarious. I really like her, and I like her on the show. I think she's a great addition to The Breakfast Club. Something about their dynamic works well, so I'm happy that she's on it, and it seems to be doing well. So good for her, good for them. Shout out to that. So anyway, Charlamagne the God described Risa Tisa's behavior as big back behavior. And of course, people want to take this and take it personal, right? Because if you watch Risa Tisa's video, you see that she is a heavier set woman. She really does fit the description of a big back. Now, as of late, I've noticed that term being used, big back. I'm trying to unbig my back, yada, yada, yada. And it's just a terminology that people have been saying lately to say I'm trying to lose weight. And I may have love handles, or, you know, my waist isn't as slim as I would like it to be. So I'm trying to unbig my back. So that's a thing that people have been saying lately. So that's just some quick context. So he says this, and T.S. Madison, who is a transsexual, and I don't know if transsexual is politically correct anymore, but that is what I've heard is what the TS stands for. Nonetheless, she is a man dressed as a woman. I think she got her breasts done, but she still has her external organ. You know what I mean. So yeah, it's one of those. And let me just, side note, I don't know how I came across this on Twitter, but there are so many videos of women who are, oh, there's an actual term for, it's not ambidextrous, it's not that, but it's basically women who have both parts. I don't think they, no, she has a pussy too, right? No, but I, this is just me talking to myself, obviously. Basically, a woman who was born with both genitalia. And there is a whole porn subculture on that. Oh my God. I literally fumbled across that. I don't know what brought me to that, but I was so fascinated. I'm like, oh my gosh. Anyway, so that's what T.S. Madison is, okay? I don't think she has any news out available. I'm not trying to look for it. But again, I came across stuff like that that was completely not suitable for work. So please don't go look for it. This is just me telling you what she looks like or how she looks like. So that's C.S. Madison, right? So C.S. Madison decides to call out Charlamagne the God for calling Risa Tisa big back behavior and wants to point out that there are women of different shapes and sizes who have behaved the way Risa Tisa has. And it's like, obviously, right? Obviously. I'm not a big back woman, but I've definitely been in relationships like that or situationships like Risa Tisa where I probably should have did better, right? I probably should have done better. That's the joke here. Okay, it's the alliteration, big back behavior. It's the fact that, you know, there's a stereotype placed upon heavier set women for them to be seen as people who are more desperate and will do anything to fall in love. And look, I know the shoe is not a cute shoe, but she fits in the shoe. Okay, she said herself in her TikTok series that she saw many red flags, but she wanted to get married so badly that she still looked past them. So he's calling a spade a spade. Let's not put on this freaking, victim-ass mentality for your convenience. No, she said herself, I looked past these red flags. I take accountability for that. Okay, so, and she happens to be big backed. Anyway, the point is, it was a joke. T.S. Madison decided to say, oh, we gotta do something. Like, she was saying rhetoric that was calling for violence against Charlamagne. And, you know, T.S. Madison is born a man. So for her to say that against Charlamagne, the perception that one could take from that is, oh, she's ensuing violence and this is not okay. This is not right. Right. So that is the perception. Okay, fine. So Jess Hilarious, again, who is on the show on The Breakfast Club as the new talk host, the co-host on the show, she's been doing great. Just Hilarious decided to call out T.S. Madison for that and said, that's not okay, yada, yada, yada. You know, you take it too far. You know, she's saying what she's saying, and I agree with her. Mandy from Horrible Decisions, and who was also on the show, on the podcast show, what is it called? See the Thing Is, but that show has since been not canceled, but they since stopped recording. They decided to wrap it up. Mandy called out Jess Hilarious for being transphobic based on previous things Jess has said not too long ago. And remember, I talked about it on this podcast. There was a woman, there was a transgender woman, I'll say that, a transgender woman who came on the internet talking about black women is stealing the style from trans women, you know, or gay men altogether. And so she just was like, absolutely not, you know. And this whole idea of heterosexual women or women who identify as the sex and gender that they were given by, you know, that's stupid ass discussion. But the point is, there's this term in which that is like a woke term. It's called cisgender. So me being a woman, I agree with the identification as a woman, and that was already quote unquote given to me by birth, but also placed on my birth certificate, I agree with that, right? So my pronouns are, you know, that's that. So just hilarious is calling that out. Like, you haven't been saying cisgender until people were telling, particularly people who are in that community, have been telling you to say that, right? Like, you don't need someone to tell you what type of woman you are. You are just a woman, period. There's no cisgender, no, like, you're a woman. You don't have to have a qualifier for that. As for women who are, as for people who identify as something different than how they were born, they have to have that qualification, because that's just the difference there. Like, I'm a biological woman. Even saying biological woman is so freaking ridiculous and it's redundant. But nonetheless, I'm making the point. I'm making the clarity here that I'm a woman and you're not. I'm a woman and you're not. So Just Hilarious goes back and forth with Mandy, just pretty much lets her have it. I thought she did a really great job doing so. And I'm Team Jess. I was Team Jess from the beginning. And look, she is a fellow Aquarius. I know I said here I don't typically like other Aquarius women because of my historical experiences with them. But I think that's primarily because some of them are not in that mature version of being Aquarius. It's this whole thing. If you know, you know. But yeah, typically I don't really rock with other Aquarius women. Okay, anyway, nonetheless, we all got mental illnesses, and stop taking things personal. That's really all I have to say for that. Let's go ahead and move forward with our next topic. Okay, mea culpa is actually a Latin term, and it means to admit your wrong. It means to admit your fault. So it means literally through my fault. It is its origin is from a prayer of confession in the Catholic Church. And lawyers typically use this in their line of defense, or just in their rhetoric when they're in the courthouse. So this is an actual term. And it's the name of the latest Tyler Perry movie. A movie that was written, produced, starred, acted, costumed, soundtrack given by or created by Tyler Perry. And I think he does this as a flex, right? Like, oh, I'm Tyler Perry. I could do it all. And look, it's a great thing to have multiple talents and to be aware of your talents, to know that, oh, I can do this, I could do that, I could do this and that. Wow, that says a lot. But it's been a laughing matter. It's been a running joke to see how Tyler Perry has produced such subpar material, and he keeps on doing it. And for it to still be said, written, produced, starred in by Tyler Perry, for him to keep saying that in a form of it being a flex is the joke here, is the laughing matter. Nonetheless, Mea Culpa came out on Netflix a few days ago. And it was a sight to not be seen. Now, look, there are a couple of scenes, more than a couple, I would say, that definitely gets you hot and bothered. I would definitely say don't watch this with a family member who is your mother or your father, right? No one of that type of connection with you. Maybe watch it with your man, right? That's cool. But the whole movie made no sense. I'm still trying to understand if the mother of Kelly Rowland's character's husband, if she was really sick, or was that a lie? I'm trying to understand why it looks like that. You know how a lot of his movies, except Why Did I Get Married, which I feel like really was one of them. It may be in the classic. And even Why Did I Get Married 2 is really good. So I give credit where it's due. I think both of those movies did what was supposed to be done. I could still watch those movies today, particularly Why Did I Get Married, the first one. I could watch that today and still be happy. It's just, yeah, it's a very satisfying movie. It still is funny. He did a really good job in there. In that movie, and even in his role as the husband. I know Cat Williams said Tyler Perry plays as a woman better than he does as a man, but in this role, I think he did a good job. Okay, and Why Did I Get Married? Anyway, he was not in Mea Culpa. He did not have a role in that movie. He was not shown in that movie, at least not a cameo. At least I didn't notice a cameo of Tyler Perry in that movie. But that movie was a lot. It was a lot. A lot of sexual scenes were present in that movie, and a lot of scenes that just made no sense. Now, Trevante Rhodes, is that his name? Trevante. He is known for his Trevantes. Yeah, Trevante Rhodes. My God, today. I know him from Moonlight. Okay, from Moonlight. So I remember him from Moonlight. He played, a homosexual character who actually became involuntarily and / voluntarily abstinent after his initial encounter with the man when he was in his teens, and he just never forgot about that moment. Or at least he was abstinent after, he was only abstinent from men after that. Nonetheless, he played the shit out of that role. I haven't watched that movie again because It really threw me for a loop. I remember when I watched it and I went to the theaters, I think it was like the weekend opening for it, and there was a lot of commotion about it. And I think I remember getting the opportunity to get a free showing, a free ticket showing for it. And I was like, okay, cool, sounds interesting, Moonlight. I literally did not know what I was going to watch. So when it started, I really loved the cinematic features of it. It looked really good. Like the picture, the colors, everything in it looks really, really good. And then it got to the story of this young Black man who struggled with his homosexuality. And I was like, oh, I didn't know we were going there. I did not know this movie was going to be about that. Anyway, it is a really good story. It's a really good story. You see, it's basically a coming of age story of this young man who was treated differently because people just kind of knew that he was gay, and he dealt with a mother who had drug addiction, and he just had to deal with just the trials and tribulations from that. He ended up having to raise himself, and he ended up actually forgiving his mother for her poor parenting during his childhood. And you see how he is this attractive man. Just my God. Anyway, he played the crap out of his role, the crap out of it. There weren't any, like, necessarily, in his adult character in the movie, there weren't any, like, sex scenes. There was one bedroom scene in which he was just, like, I think they kissed. I think it was super light. Like, it wasn't, like, some, you know, bang, 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 thank you, ma'am type of thing, or thank you, sir. But nonetheless, you felt the emotion in the movie. I still remember how I felt in that movie theater. And watching this scene, the whole movie, I was taken aback. And this was my first time introduced to Trevante Rhodes. in the big screen at all. I wasn't familiar with his work before, so I was really, really impressed. So that just left a great mark on my tongue, pun intended. And that movie won a lot of awards thereafter. So that came out in 2016. Afterwards, yeah, the next thing I saw him in, oh yeah, he was in Bird Box also. Oh, that came out, yeah. So that Bird Box came out in 2018, but Moonlight came out in 2016. I saw both, and so 2016 was when I was introduced to Trevante Rhodes. And I never forget a face. I never forget a face. And it was nice to see that he was in this movie, Mea Culpa. In this movie, his character is this quote-unquote womanizer who really enjoys sexual interactions with women. He have a whole sex dungeon in his big-ass studio apartment, and there are so many scenes in which he's just getting sucked off, and it's just a lot going on. I remember I was watching this with my man, and I was just like, I don't know if it's appropriate for me to be turned on right now, you know, because I always want to be respectful, but my God. That nigga's fine. Okay. Anyway, there's a scene of him with Kelly Rowland, and they're just making it do what it do, clapping cheeks, bam, bam, thank you, ma'am. It's a good time. And they're covered in paint because he happens to be a painter. He's a talented, world-renowned artist. It's just like, come on. What I didn't like in the movie was his hair. I don't know what was going on. I don't know if he had that Boris Kojo wig that Boris Kojo had from Thou Art Loose, or what movie was he? What Tyler Perry movie was that again? I forget. But y'all know what I'm talking about. I don't know if it was a wig, or I don't know if he grew it out, but he did not look good in that wig. But I saw past that because I remember how he looks just in general. But yeah, the movie was trash. I mean, I don't know what else to say. I know people want to be nice and say, oh, Kelly Rowland looks so... Kelly Rowland looked great. Kelly Rowland is a beautiful woman. Like, why would have... That doesn't change the fact that this movie was trash. What are we saying right now? Can we stop with this whole, like, oh, we got to support Black? We could support Black by also being honest and truthful and giving constructive feedback. Now, Tyler Perry could do what it do with that, but it seems like he doesn't really care what we think. So why should we be liars here? Like, why can't we just tell the truth? It was a poor example of a plot, of a storyline. I think he could have done better if he just had a team with him. Maybe he does, but he's just like the primary point person for each part of the movie, the writing, the producing, the creating. So that's that. But it was a crappy movie. The storyline just was confusing. There was so many things going on all at once, so many unanswered questions, so many moments in which the characters just didn't make sense. Like, it wasn't realistic. Like, why is Mea Culpa, who's played by Kelly Rowland, why is she constantly getting disrespected by her mother-in-law and she's not speaking up? Or it's just not something that you could actually see in real life. And I feel like a segment of a movie should demonstrate some moments of reality. People should be able to relate to such a movie. You know, I think there are so many examples of people in real life who do have conflicting relationships with their parent-in-law. So that's realistic, but the constant disrespect and you just like sitting by the wayside and taking it, I don't know if that's all the way accurate, especially in the initial scene in which the mother-in-law is requesting for her son to sit next to another woman, and she says at the table, I wish you would have married this woman instead of your actual wife. And Kelly Rowland's just sitting there. Child, I would have gotten up, left, and said, go ahead and marry her then, nigga. You know, that's what I would have said. That's what I would have said. So, yeah, the movie was interesting. And when I say interesting, I mean, no, it wasn't. Kellen Rowland was great to look at. Trevante Rhodes is amazing to look at since I'm attracted to men. That's really what I looked at. I mean, but, you know, women look good too. But, you know, and there was some interesting sex scenes. Ooh, there goes a titty. There goes some nipple action. That's fun. But, yeah, it's something to do. It's something to do. And regardless of the feedback that we give to Tyler Perry, he's going to do what it does, right? This movie is the top rated movie on Netflix, and that's really all that matters. I think he thrives off of the conversations that we have about his style of filming, of creating movies and just content in general. So I think ultimately there's currency in that. So regardless of how bad it is, people like to hate watch. People like to watch, criticize, and then watch it again and criticize it some more. We have hate watch parties, whether it's virtually or in person. This is something that is very much normal for us in our society to do. So nonetheless, he is making money off of us complaining and whining about his style of creating and producing and writing a movie. He's still going to do it, right? He's still going to continue and be filthy rich. So shout out to Tyler Perry and Oprah, because we got to add Oprah here. Speaking of Oprah, look at the transition. My God, today, Oprah, you know, I talked about a few episodes ago. Everything's a few episodes ago. I don't know when did I speak on this, but I definitely did a few episodes ago. So Oprah came forward and was honest about how she has been using Ozempic for her weight loss. And she was like, look, I want to look good in my body, and this seemed to be the best thing for me to do, so I decided to do it. And so it is. I think she's the only celebrity I know who's been honest about her use of Ozempic, which has been seen as this controversial drug to use for weight loss, for it to be the primary purpose. And what's controversial about it is Ozempic is particularly for people who struggle with diabetes. It's a way to kind of get that managed in a proper manner. But there are a lot of celebrities who have been using it because they can't afford it and it's convenient. As for those who aren't celebrities, they need Ozempic for diabetic purposes. And the issue is it's not being made available to them because of the shortage. So people are blaming celebrities who are using Ozempic for vanity reasons as a way to just kind of point the blame. Anyway, Oprah decided to be transparent and say, yeah, I've been using Ozempic. It's been able to manage my weight. I haven't been able to handle or manage my weight the way I would like, and it's been a lot on my mental health, you know? So it is what it is. So what's the conflict here? Oprah has been the face of Weight Watchers for years now. She has been the one giving the commercial about Weight Watchers, talking about it on her show when she had her show. She's also talked about it in magazines. Like, she was in partnership with them for quite some time. But she has recently departed from her role with Weight Watchers, and the move is definitely coincidental. So according to Business Insider, long-term, the move potentially spells serious issues for the 60-year-old diet company's relevance today. Weight Watchers was once the weight loss standard for many people, particularly women. In the age of Ozempic, it feels like an outdated operating system. Winfrey has been something of a kingmaker in wellness trends for almost 40 years. Quote unquote, Oprah effect was coined by analysts to name a remarkable trend. I'm trying to find a part where it talks about her leaving, but I did read that somewhere. And yeah, she decided to, either she decided or they decided to part ways from her. Regardless, she is no longer with Weight Watchers. And it's really because of, Oprah has left Weight Watchers, sending the stocks of Weight Watchers to spiral downwards. And it is demonstrating a doom in this type of weight loss pursuit. And this is in the wake of the culture that we're in that features Ozempic and other fast pills that people could use for their weight loss management. Now, what I said about this in a previous episode regarding Oprah being transparent about her use of Ozempic for primarily weight loss management, I think I was in agreement with it, right? I think I just said, like, look, at this point, it is what it is. People are going to do whatever is best for them to do to make them feel good. I think it's been this common rhetoric to be on the bandwagon of shaming those who use Ozempic for weight loss reasons and making them feel bad because you're taking it away from people who are diabetic and there's a shortage because of you. And it's like, first of all, we don't know that. First of all, we don't know that. You know, there's always some type of bandwagon trend that we're supposed to adopt and get on board of when that's not always the case, and it's okay. I think, you know, do what you gotta do for your well-being and your mental health. I'm not necessarily an advocate for, like, plastic surgery and, like, BBLs and stuff like that, not necessarily. But I'm also understanding that people are continuously brainwashed into believing a certain aesthetic looks better than others, right? And until you either could detach yourself from the consumerism of that type of standard of beauty, then you will be free from this pressure of adopting to that beauty standard. I can't be mad at you. I can't. If you genuinely, consistently feel bad about how you look and feel like this drug or this surgery upon surgery upon surgery, because yes, it does continue. It doesn't just stop with one. I mean, typically it doesn't just stop with one. Then that's on you. Like, sometimes you do have to get to that little Kim phase and realize, yeah, I probably shouldn't have done that, but I can't stop. And Little Kim back in the day looked so good. She was just fine before all of the plastic surgery. But, you know, you can't tell people how to feel about themselves. They have to feel it for themselves by themselves. So, yeah, shout out to Oprah. Shout out to Oprah. There's nothing else to say about that. Kellogg's said, if you're poor, eat cereal for dinner. That's what the CEO of Kellogg said recently. And I mean, is he wrong? People are saying, oh, he's tone deaf. He is horrible. Look at what an elitist said. Look, people have been eating cereal for dinner for years before the CEO of Kellogg's decided to come forward and give us the green light. What are we talking about? Cereal is cheap. Is convenient, is filling because of the milk, the liquid, right? All of that is something that seems to be attractive for those who are living in poverty. Now, is it recommended to eat that for dinner? Probably not. Is that something that you want to highlight and boast about? Like, well, what you having for dinner? I'm having some cereal, girl. Ooh, you know, invite me over. Grab me a bowl. No, because we've been conditioned to believe cereal is only for what? Breakfast. Okay, but that doesn't take away the reality that people have been eating this for dinner and breakfast and lunch for years now. It's just something that has been economically sound for where they are in their social economic circumstance. So Kellogg's CEO Gary Pilnick has offered a controversial solution for cash-strapped families who are struggling to afford their grocery bills, just eat cereal for dinner. Quote, the cereal category has always been quite affordable, and it tends to be a great destination when consumers are under pressure. If you think about it, the cost of cereal for a family versus what they might otherwise do, that's going to be much more affordable. Yeah, and look, a lot of people are giving him backlash for it. They calling him, you know, oh, privilege and tone deaf. And sure, I know it sounds tone deaf. I know he's quote unquote missing the mark. But is he not telling the truth? But look, I mean, all in all, there are meats that you can't afford for dinner that are cost effective. Chicken is the cheapest meat that you could probably afford. Maybe hot dogs are cheap too, right? So you could use that, you know, pair that with some rice, and then boom, you got a nice quote unquote typical dinner. So I would encourage that more. But, you know, we live in the society in which people think, you know, only certain foods are for certain times of the day, and we're living this construct. So it's up to you. Anyway, I'm not eating cereal for dinner. But I don't think we should be shameful of those who do. It's not something that they're doing for choice or, you know, for happenstance. It's something that is, there's no other choice but to do it. So there we have it. Cereal for dinner. All right, you guys, I'm going to go ahead and end it here. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe and tell a friend to tell a friend. And I will check in with you all next time. Peace.